Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Very interesting month in December. I really was able to get a lot of guests on the show, and it's interesting. There's always kind of a kickback when I do that because it seems like I'm rushing to catch up with everything else that's going on and in my life, and try to get some guests this month. I really am kind of behind the curve where that's concerned, but I want to thank everyone that's been going to the archives and listening to the show, and thank the people out on Life Beyond Earth, which is a YouTube channel, and starting to publish a lot of the shows here on Ohio Exopolitics. Really a big crowd out there, so it's hard to tell if we can, hopefully I'll be able to get some of these Meyer shows out there as well for too long. I've been learning a tremendous amount of material and relearning a tremendous amount of material related to the Meyer case, and I know we've been talking about a lot of other things besides the Meyer case on the show lately, but really the major focus of Ohio Exopolitics over the years has become the Meyer case, because I think the information here, his writings, are the most reliable information in the world, and it's an endless conglomeration of wisdom. What can I say? But let's step back in time. Billy's 80 years old now, but he grew up in northern Switzerland, in Bulac, Switzerland. And he later would write an article called How It All Began that described his experiences. And this was before his experience with his first mentor, who was named Svath. Billy, his spiritual experiences can be traced all the way back to a time when he was 4 years old. He grew up in Bulac, Switzerland, which is a town in northern Switzerland. And one morning, let's say about 3 a.m., really the middle of the night from most people's perspectives, young Billy crawled out a lower window in his bedroom and sat down on a bench and looked up at a beautiful starry night. And he said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." Young Edward Albert Meyer was very sensitive to the impulses that were coming out of the storage banks. The Meyer information says there are storage banks around our planet. There are storage banks of information around the solar system. There are storage banks around the galaxy. There are storage banks associated to the universe. And we have something called a we form that's being created here on Earth. All of the human beings here on the planet are connected subconsciously. And that knowledge of the whole planet is being dumped into these storage banks, which are sometimes called the Akashic Records. May not be the best term, but anyway, these storage banks have both true and false information in them. Sometimes you'll get religious information that's stored in the storage banks, but it's really the accumulated knowledge of the we form, and the we form is a very interesting thing. If you look at birds as they fly and they move together, instantly changing directions, that's what I would call an example of a we form. The same with the school of the fish, a herd of cattle, a big group of deer running together. And the same kind of thing is occurring on a subconscious level here on the earth. And I think it ultimately may be a good thing, because those here on the planet that are studying the Meyer material on a very serious basis can influence others subconsciously, because we're all connected. Even though they may never talk to the individual, they may never listen to a show like this, there are people out there that are really studying this material that are probably having a tremendous effect on people, but subconsciously and unconsciously. And so there's really three minds. We have the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and the unconscious mind. And I think these impulses that Billy was feeling, they stimulated the memories that he had subconsciously. And that's why he said things like, since ancient times, you've lived among the stars. And Billy suddenly knew who he was and what his mission on the earth was. And he also said something about, besides these good memories that were penetrating him, and besides knowing where he had to go in his life, he also said he knew what space and time signify concerning the evolution of human beings and all things. This is a mystery to me still, but I find that very thought-provoking, what time and space signify. And he also said, I recognize that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, the light of true love remained invisible, creational, and for all great time. See, Billy was already picking up on the first creational natural law that the Meyer material talks about, is love. And one of the passages, Billy has a book, it's called, I think it's called The Law of Love. And we just get bits and pieces of it translated, because it's really meant for people that are true FIGU members. And it says, one particular thing that always stuck in my mind was, it says, love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. And it goes on to say something to the effect that nothing exists without the love of creation. And it goes on and says, every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love, and that the creation radiates love, and that the indescribable splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. Now, what is creation? Creation is the universal intelligence. It's really the force behind our universe. It's the intelligence that created all the stars and solar systems and galaxies and planets. But you notice we don't, in the Meyer information, the word God isn't used. I think for several reasons. First of all, it's taken on, through religion, a very anthropomorphic quality, a very human-like quality. When this universal intelligence isn't human, it, in fact, in the Meyer information, it's referred to by the German word Wesenheiten. And a Wesenheiten is an entity, a living being that doesn't have so much control over its own evolution. It evolves according to a pattern. It's almost like a computer program that's unfolding. For example, human beings are called Wesen. That's because we have a personality, and we make decisions about our own evolution. The universe evolves according to kind of a predetermined plan, and in that sense, it's kind of, even though it radiates love, it's kind of robotic. It's a neutral, positive entity that builds universes as a part of its own evolution. In other words, the universe created all of this matter and all of these people, these human spirits, to help it with its own evolution. Probably the easiest way to understand this is to take a look at the human spirit. The human spirit is said to be a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness. And I think I've heard it called a holographic copy of the universal consciousness. And that would explain why Billy's third contact, a woman named Semyase, would say things like, the spirit is the wonder of all wonders, and it's the bearer of the creative realm. And she said that it's the seat of the infinite. And she says that every person has a spirit, and it records everything he says or does, even our, what you would call or could call, our impulsations. Which are impulses that come out of the consciousness. So the spirit form resides in the middle of our brain in an area called the superior colliculus. Now this midbrain area is part of the brain that controls what they call saccadic eye movements, to the left or to the right. So the superior colliculus is related to eye movements. They call eyes the window to the soul. Probably a more realistic thing would say be to say that the eyes are the window to the spirit. And or what's called in the German the Geist form, the spirit form. And the superior colliculus is also involved in what they call multisensory integration in a variety of animals. So your spirit form comes into the body of a child at 21 days, and it brings with it what you could call the three minds: the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and the unconscious mind. It also brings a new personality. So every time a child is born, a spirit form is put in the child. Now, chances are that this spirit form has been around. You know, every once in a while, a brand new spirit form will come into a child. But typically, spirit forms on the earth for human beings are about 4 million years old. So locked in, this spirit form is the information associated with the previous life. And a lot of the information also is stored in the storage banks as well in the subconscious mind, is my understanding. So there we have a material consciousness, which is your personality and your consciousness that I just talked about, the unconscious, the subconscious, and the conscious mind. And we have this spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness survives. It never dies. It survives death. In fact, when death occurs, what happens is the spirit form leaves the body and it takes your material consciousness with it. And the material consciousness goes into this area called the overall consciousness block. The spirit form leaves the physical realm and goes into this like etheric energy band around the planet, the spirit realm. And every spirit form creates for itself an overall consciousness block. And the overall consciousness block absorbs all the information from the previous life. So all of your wisdom, your knowledge, all of your experiences, all of these are put down into their very essence. And they're stored in the spirit form. The overall consciousness block is working when the spirit form is in the spiritual realm. So there's time between physical lives where the overall consciousness block is processing everything that occurred in your previous life. And it's distilling down all the important information, the love, the wisdom, the discernment, the logic, the sense of fairness, the ambition, all these things are distilled down to their essence, to their neutral positive essence, and then the spirit form absorbs them, and the spirit form actually creates the new personality and the new consciousness, and then creation will take the spirit form and its new consciousness and put it back into the body of a child. And this process goes on for millions of years. The Meyer material explains that there are seven stages of evolution that the human spirit form goes through. And the first stage is primitive life. And the second stage is rational life. Even though here on the earth we think we have all this technology and we think we're evolving very, very far, we're still only in the second stage of human life. Now the stage that comes next is a stage called intelligent life. And we're close to moving in to being an intelligent society. In intelligent life, human civilizations will start to learn to travel in space. They will start to learn genetic engineering. They will start to move away from warfare, and they will start to take better care of their planet. In the fourth stage is a dramatic leap forward. That's where highly advanced human civilizations will start to learn to travel from star to star with almost no time passing. They'll also create ships that have organic intelligences within them. And this goes along with genetic advancements because, for example, Billy's third contact, a woman named Semyase, had what they call a beam ship. And which is, you know, a saucer-shaped craft. And it had an organic intelligence within the ship, which the Pleiaren created. And this organic intelligence was self-aware, and it ran the ship. And Semyase could communicate with it telepathically. And it, for all intents and purposes, her craft was a living being with a metallic hull. And I know this is strange, and this is where, you know, the truth is stranger than fiction. And you'll find this to be the case the more you study the information related to the Billy Meyer case. You'll find so much information that it's a little staggering at times. But I think that's part of evolution, is you kind of have to, you know, try to wrap your mind around things. So, and that's the fourth stage of evolution for human societies. The fifth stage is where humans start to begin the final stages of physical life. And it takes about 40 to 60 million years of reincarnations to get to the fifth stage. And in the fifth stage, people will become what they call the king of wisdom, the Ishwish. The material consciousness becomes very powerful. And you can do things like telepathy, telekinesis, levitation, all these kinds of abilities. Now, in the sixth stage of evolution, human beings lose the need for a physical body, and they're half physical, half spiritual. And we spend like 30 million years in this state. And then the final stage of evolution for human beings is we enter into a spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. And Billy was taught by Thoth something called spiritual telepathy, which enabled him as a young boy to start to receive information from this spiritual plane. And human beings, human spirit forms will spend about 2.9 billion years in this final spiritual plane. And then we're said to merge back with the universal consciousness. So that was a quick overview of what they call the law of becoming and passing, or the law of reincarnation. And this is one of the creational natural laws. Along with love, we started talking about love. And this information is broadcasted via these storage banks and signals. So if we were more aware, if our thinking was more neutral, positive, we would know some more of this information. But because on the earth, we're in such a strange state right now. And there's a great book that Billy has called The Might of Thoughts. And in the foreword of this book, it says, the humans of earth are ill in their consciousness. And I think this is so true. Particularly, you can see this today more and more and more. There's all kinds of examples on the web where people are behaving very irrationally in public places. And a lot of times they're being filmed, or they're filming themselves. So, and this is what we're fighting against right now, because the human race here on the earth has a great future if we can get through this period that we're in now. And Billy learned about this age that we're in. It's called the third millennium, and it started when the Americans dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's a time of confusion and maliciousness on the earth. And this age will last about 800 years, unfortunately. And after that, we'll go into a great, what you could call a golden age. So Thoth would meet with Billy in northern Switzerland, and first Billy would get these telepathic messages, and he would be told to go out into the forest and wade, and then out of the sky would come a silvery pear-shaped craft, which would land, and Thoth would step out, and oftentimes Billy would be pulled in the ship via some kind of technology. And Thoth would then start to teach Billy and to teach him about his previous lives, for one thing. There are seven incarnations of the Meyer spirit form. They're very important. Enoch or Henoch, as he's called, Eliah or Elijah, as we call him, Isaiah or Yizaiah, as he was called, Jeremiah or Jeremiah, as he was called, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. The seventh incarnation is Edward Albert Meyer, who we call Billy or Beam. And those, there are other incarnations of the Meyer spirit form. You know, Billy is called the Universal Prophet. And he, according to Meyer information, was Socrates, Aristotle, Galileo, Mozart, Mendelssohn, Rasputin, and others. So what is happening here is this extraterrestrial Svath knows that, recognizes the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer. They have the technology to track spirit forms. And they know that it had been a teacher. And they know it's on a mission to continue this teaching here on the earth. So what Svath is doing is supporting this mission that Edward Albert Meyer was on. That's why the Plarin have direct contact with Billy and not other Earth humans. So I get that question a lot. The Plarin, because they're in stage five of evolution, just before they go into a half physical, half spiritual stage, their thoughts are very different than ours. And just being in contact with them would upset our normal evolution. So their laws do not allow them to have direct contact with us. It would also be unhealthy for them, because our thought forms, our thought vibrations, cause them to literally lose control of their bodies. And that happened, and that's why Semyase suffered the great accident that she did. I'm kind of all over the place tonight a little bit, and I apologize for that. Billy's first contacts were in northern Switzerland, in Block, Switzerland, with a man named Svath. Billy met with him for 11 years. Svath met with Billy from about 1945 to about 1953. Excuse me. And then Billy got his second teacher. His second teacher was a woman named Daskett from the Tao universe. The Tao universe was created 46 trillion years ago when our universe was created. It's a parallel universe to ours. The two universes are adjacent. The people, Askett's people, are called the Timmers. They came from our universe into the Tao universe thousands of years ago. They developed a technology to go from one universe to the next without damaging the universe or their ships. And they chose to reside in this parallel universe. Now, Askett is coming back to our universe, which the Meyer information calls the DERN universe. And she brings other Timmers, people, with her, because in addition to supporting the education of young Edward Albert Meyer, they are also on a mission to prevent a gigantic catastrophe in the earth, which most likely would have been a nuclear kind of exchange on the earth, which would have wiped us out and would have also negatively affected other solar systems. So the Timmers are on a very important mission here on the earth. Askett sent a robotic craft to Switzerland in about 1953, 1954, roughly time frame. And Billy's about 16 years old at this time. And he's told to go up on a hill where he meditates a lot, where he thinks about things a lot. And this robotic craft will come there to visit him. Well, eventually does show up. And one of the unusual things about this craft is it has a very strange tripod landing arrangement with some very unusual shaped objects on the tripod for some reason. He never elaborated what that was all about. But when the ship landed, Billy went inside and he noticed there was no one else in there. It was a robot ship, so to speak, kind of like the ships we're starting to develop now. You know, the little drones. This was like a drone, but big enough for a human to be in. So he sat down on the chair, and there was a bright flash of light, and he held up his hands above his eyes or over his eyes. And when he looked down, he noticed the ship was invisible. He couldn't see the ship. He couldn't even see his own body. And this ship starts to move very, very slowly. Lifts up on this hill that Billy had climbed. And it goes over to the town that Billy lives in. And it goes and it hovers over the house where Billy lives. He doesn't know why this is occurring. He's floating. From his perspective, he's floating in midair. He can't see the ship. Very shocking experience. And then it takes off like a shot towards the Middle East, and eventually he sees the pointed structures of the Great Pyramids and the Sphinx off in the distance, but it doesn't land in Egypt. It lands in Jordan first, and he gets out of Jordan and sees the red rocks and feels the heat, because he's been in Switzerland where it was fairly cold. And he remembered how strange it felt that he was sweating when he climbed up this hill. But now he's in Jordan, and, you know, can you imagine the shock? And then it's becoming night, and out of the sky comes what looks like a falling star, and then it gets larger and larger, this bright light. And eventually, he can see it's like a gigantic 300-foot disc, which lands nearby, and then it just sits there. Nothing happens. And he waits, and he waits, and he waits for half an hour, and then finally, Askew gets out, and she looks, the way Billy describes it, is a modern angel. That's what all he could say. And he's really shocked because he feels like he knows her. He knows who she is, but he doesn't know why. I mean, he doesn't really have clear access to those previous life memories. So she introduces herself, and the two talk a little, and they go off to her ship. And her ship then goes to the Giza Plateau, and it slowly lands. It's completely cloaked, and it slowly lands by the Sphinx. And Billy and her get out, and she puts a device on his belt, and then he becomes invisible. She touches the device on her belt. She becomes invisible. They can see each other, and she explains to him that others will not be able to see them. And they're essentially invisible now. So Billy plays some tricks on some local women. I won't go into all that detail because we've got so much to cover. In any sense, they go below the ground. Askew knows a secret passage. And they go far, far below the Giza Plateau. Now, the Meyer information says there are old cubical constructions below the Great Pyramid, which are 73,000 years old, the same age as the Great Pyramid. And they also, it also describes in the Meyer information that there were extraterrestrials on the earth in the very ancient past. They didn't do all the work to create the Great Pyramids. Part of this was just done by earth humans that were here, but the design and the technologies for creating this came from the people from Orion, and they also had telepathic and telekinetic abilities. So they actually, in some cases, did part of the work using telekinesis. So the great megalithic and monolithic structures all over the earth were built by these very ancient civilizations. There is an Atlantis, there are two Atlantises on the earth. One began about 130,000 years ago. The second Atlantis ended about 12,000 years ago in a great catastrophe. So what we're getting here is a bit of history as Askin and Billy go far, far underground in what's called an Egyptian darkness, very, very pitch dark, as they walk through these old catacombs and these old cubicle constructions, and then they eventually get to this wall with a gigantic stone called an ashlar. And Askin has a technology that kind of turns the stone into kind of an energetic form, and Billy and Askin walk through, and then it goes back to being a stone after they leave, after they pass through it. And Billy sees an ancient spacecraft in a large, gigantic hallway, smaller craft. He sees guards. And then to the right is like a platform. And on this platform is a what looks like the cross from the crucifixion. I mean, it's like a perfect replica. And he sees a crown of thorns. Again, perfect replica. A blood-encrusted nail, and Billy's just like stunned by all this. He's at a loss for words. Doesn't know what to think of it all. You know, Billy kind of comes from a Christian background. So, Askin doesn't say anything, just takes them out, and they go back where they came, back to the surface. And she explains to Billy that after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, the earth was devastated. And there was a small group of humans that survived, earth humans. And they lost all knowledge of their background and their history. And they were just struggling to survive. And extraterrestrials came here again. But these were not the benevolent people that had been here in the past during the time of Pelagon, some 150,000 years ago, and probably the majority of the extraterrestrials here 130,000 years ago during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria were very benevolent as well. But these people were interested in ruling the earth. They came, my understanding is from Beta Centauri and other places, and they passed themselves off as creators. The first of these rulers, I believe, was named Jehave. And these brutal dictators, they lived hundreds and hundreds of years, and they created a religion and demanded that these earth peoples worship them. And they were very brutal. I mean, if you know, killing and murder was very normal for them. In fact, often the offspring would kill the father in order to gain power. So Jehave was killed by his son Jehovan. Then Jehovan had a son, I believe was Arasame. And then for whatever reason, Arasame went underground. And they no longer resided on the surface, these Giza intelligences. Now this is about 12, maybe 11,000 years ago, or 10,000 years ago. And then Arasame ruled for many, many centuries, and eventually he was thrown out of power by his nephew, Hen. And Hen, according to my information, I always tell people, make your own decision about this. Hen was the same person in our Old Testament called Jehovah. And he ruled, again, with a rod of iron. He was very brutal, demanded worship. He was the one that wiped out Sodom and Gomorrah. Part of the destruction was because of a nuclear weapon that was used. Again, that's what the Meyer case says. Now, these Giza intelligences stayed underground here on the earth, and they influenced our society. They used religion, and they wanted to make themselves the ruler of our society. And they were here during World War II. For example, they influenced Hitler. There's a very interesting scenario where you have these Giza intelligences, who are also known as the Befoth, were influencing the secret societies of Germany. For example, they influenced the Thule Society, the Thule Society. And there was one individual in that society named Hermann Steinschneider, who knew Hitler directly, and he was probably one of the strongest influences on Hitler, which eventually, through this influence of the Giza intelligences and this Hermann Steinschneider, Hitler essentially was corrupted. He had great potential. The Plejaren impulsed Hitler as a young boy, the player and the positive extraterrestrials that had connections with Billy, contact. They were impulsing Hitler during before World War II because they recognized his great potential as a leader. He would have been a great positive influence on the earth, but he was persuaded by Hermann Steinschneider in these Giza intelligences. Eventually, the Plejaren took care of the Giza intelligences. This was about in 1970 to 1980 time frame. And then the Plejaren eventually left the Earth in 1995. Now, Billy still has these intermittent contacts with Ptah and Quetzal, two of the men of the Plejaren, high-ranking individuals. Both of them are what they call Ishwishes, or kings of wisdom. But Billy's first teacher was Svoth. His second teacher was Asket. His third teacher was the woman named Semyase that I mentioned briefly. Semyase had a great accident when one of the people at Figu walked into a room when Semyase and Billy were speaking. And Semyase fell and hit her head. And ultimately, she had to be taken to the Tao universe for treatment for the head injury. And a group of extraterrestrials called the Sonar, S-O-N-A-E-R, helped heal her. And these are very interesting ETs that don't even need ships to travel around the universe. So they have special abilities. So that's one of the reasons, again, I was saying earlier, why they can't have direct contact with us, because One of the members of the Figo, I think his name was Jacobus, walked in the room and startled Semyase. She probably felt his thoughts and was traumatized to a certain degree, because they have a very neutral, positive thought patterns. And we here on the earth are thousands of years behind them. So our thoughts are very unbalanced. And they sense that imbalance. And it's ironic that Semyase lost her balance and she fell. So in 1995 is when the Pleiaron left the earth. It's at that time they revealed their true identity. Before that, they had been called the Pleiadians a lot. They're not from our Pleiades. They live some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. Between 1975 and 86, there were three extraterrestrial bases on the Earth. The one in Switzerland had been here for 300 years at least. There was one in Asia and one in North America. I believe there were 2,862 extraterrestrial humans on the Earth. And if they had their protective electronics to shield them from the Earth humans' thoughts, they could walk down our street and you'd never know the difference. These were people from Lyra, Vega, the Pleiaron system, nearby stars. Perhaps we had people here from Alpha Centauri. Perhaps we had people here from the Barnard star. The Maya people say there are, I've heard, the 7.5 million solar systems that can support human life, something like 2.6 or 2.8 million human civilizations that are highly advanced, which I guess would be more highly advanced than us. What they call 79 pure human races, originally created by creation before there were any kind of mixing of the races. There are incredible numbers of different human races now in the universe. If you were to write this number out, it would have 63 zeros behind it. The difference in size of all these humans is very interesting. We have people that may be 16 centimeters tall, other people 40 feet tall. So humanity is the norm in the Milky Way galaxy. Now, there have been a couple other, besides the bases that I talked about, there were two other bases of extraterrestrial humans. One base is in Mount Shasta. And a group there that lived there were called the Hyperboreans. The Hyperboreans were a blonde race that had been on the Earth for something like 180,000 years. They were originally from Hyperborea, which was the area in the north where our North Pole was in ancient times. Was very warm, very stable climate. It was the summer all year. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but there was a summertime all year during the first Atlantis in Lemuria. We had visitors, not only the Hyperboreans, but that area was attacked by an individual who came here from Beta Centauri. And Beta Centauri is about 100 or 200 light years away. These extraterrestrials were led by an individual named Eris the Barbarian, who drove out the Hyperboreans. And the Hyperboreans eventually went to Mount Shasta in Northern California. And you could see their silvery or kind of a golden-colored spacecraft leave the eastern side of the mountain there. There were a small city inside this mountain, about 700 people. Occasionally they would go into villages nearby. They had special weapons which would stun Earth humans if, you know, if we get too close or we would do anything that was dangerous to them. They could just stun us and then leave, and eventually the effect of the weapon would wear off. But so these were, this was one group. There was another group that was here, had a base in the North Atlantic. The Hasters were from another galaxy. They were hundreds of light years away. They were brought here by the Pleiaren just for the opportunity to study us. The Hasters were very good-natured people. They were only 1,700 years ahead of us. So they could sit down and have a conversation with you without any kind of electronic protection. They could probably even tolerate our presence for like 17 hours or so. Then finally our unevolved negative thinking would start to wear on them, and it would probably cause irrational behavior. And I think that's something that happens. And it would be a very interesting experiment you might want to perform sometime. If you know people that you consider to be maybe somewhat unevolved, see how long you can tolerate them, how many hours you could be around them before you kind of start to lose it, so to speak. Boy, I've gone a long time and I didn't get into anything from the book The Way to Live, which is part of the spiritual teaching. I want to talk about something in the Way to Live book. It's on page 328 in my version, and it's called A Moment of Gladness. And one may simply contemplate a moment of gladness, which perhaps simply arises because one sees the snowflakes floating down, or a sunbeam which mysteriously fingers through the forest. But it can also be a flower on the edge of a path, or a bird and its twittering, which pleases the consciousness. These are the moments of peace, of the love, of the happiness, and of the equalizedness and harmony, as well as of reflection and insight. There are the moments which work deep into the inner part of the consciousness and make one's feelings tingle and please the psyche. And these moments in their distinguishing characteristics must be retained so that they constantly remain in one's memory. But the mass of the modern human beings produce no frame or context in which the experiencing of the true nature of the consciousness could be understood. Quite the contrary, everything is done so the consciousness state of equalizedness is suppressed and blocked so that it cannot cause any impulsations in the thinking, in the feeling and emotions, and in the psyche, which would give cause for joy and feelings of happiness. Also from the outside, out of one's environment and by fellow human beings, all sorts of things are done whereby the true nature of the consciousness is suppressed so that it cannot create any impulsations of thinking. So we live in a world that is not aiding us in our thought process. In fact, it's encouraging something called the false personality, or the false ego. We all have an inner I, which is related to our spirit form. The inner I is the spirit form. But we have something called the false ego, or the false personality. And let me read again from the book called The Way to Live. It says, many hours and moments of unknowledge bring the human being to losing him/herself in thoughts and feelings which are unrealistic and which are identified with the true nature of one's personality. But truthfully, the identification occurs with the false ego, which is simply accepted by the human being and is expressed outwardly, and which corresponds to one's ideas about one's own value. Continue to listen to this very important stuff here. And the false ego's greatest triumph is always making the human being believe that its interests are also the interests of the truthfully inner personality. The self-invented false ego even goes so far as to mightily make one think that the human consciousness and all its thinking and acting, as well as in its feelings and emotions and so forth, is bound to the mercy of the false personality, which guides into the unreal, whereby a terrible, unparalleled cynicism comes to the fore. Let me stop there. Now, how do you know you're being influenced by your false personality? We all have one. We all have a false personality. The false personality has an unparalleled cynicism. So if you're being cynical, that's not from your spirit form. Remember, the spirit is always neutral, positive, just like the universal consciousness. Always neutral, positive. Go into the forest and feel neutral, positive energy. If you don't live near a forest, you need to find one to escape from the negative influences in the world around you. If you can go into the forest, you'll start to feel the neutral positive again. And you'll be able to tell when the false ego is influencing you, the false personality. That's not the real you. The false personality generates negative thoughts which implant within your brain neuropathways of negative repeating thoughts which can drive you crazy and drive you to do things that you would never otherwise do. Okay, let me continue here. Whereby a terrible, unparalleled cynicism comes to the fore, through which the false ego itself and its grasping for wrong values becomes the root of all the human being's defeats, errors, and suffering. And in its wrong way, the false personality is decidedly convincing, and indeed such that it makes the human being anxious and causes him or her to panic when he or she tries to free himself through logical thinking and actions. Thus, the human being remains a victim of the false ego for as long as it takes him or her to summon the power to free him or herself from it. Remember, your thoughts need to be neutral, positive. Good thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good habits, which lead to good circumstances in your life. And this is what your life is about, evolving your consciousness. This is why we're here. Folks, thanks for listening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we'll catch you next time. Have a great evening.